Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Thanks for listening to the Primetime with Isaac and Souk. I'm Isaac, the cool one.
What? This is our podcast.
Yeah. Welcome to our podcast.
I don't know. It's brought to you by Les Schwab, though.
Yeah.
Doing the right thing since 1952.
The following show may contain adult themes not suitable for children.
Shut the hell up.
Club 1080 with Isaac and Souk.
It does go well with a chicken.
How and why are you drunk at 6 o'clock?
Well, the how's pretty self-explanatory, and the why is because I thought we were leaving at 6 a.m. tomorrow. Ergo, Latin, plenty of time to sleep it off.
Brother.
It's not breaking news, dude.
Guys, move on.
Bifurcate.
Bro.
Oh, no! We suck again!
Blazers.
That felt good.
Look at your nub.
Look at your nub.
I don't want to look at my nub.
You ever see things that are trending and you're like, oh, no.
Yeah. Immediately
you don't
want to
click on. I saw Alex Jones is trending, and I don't want to know why.
Yeah, I think the Supreme Court, tossed one of his. Well,
oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he was trying to appeal to the Supreme Court, like the Sandy Hook people are suing that piece of S.
I thought it was because there's an article in Time. I think it's in Time that came out that talked about how they're trying to use blood of younger people to stop aging in older people. And I guess Alex Jones used to talk about that a lot.
Okay. Oh. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, I know recently, within the last couple days, I saw him because there's a lawsuit from the Sandy Hook people.
Oh, no. You guys were both off. Alex Jones, there is a video of Alex Jones jumping in front of a car that was illegally transporting children at the border.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm sure it's staged, but
yeah,
that's the video. That's why he's trending.
Can I tell you? Look,
and he's fat,
and the frogs are gay.
And he,
if I could,
he's yelling, finger pointing,
always,
yeah,
angry white guy, and he is he's pushing the car.
He is such a bully and a coward. He's such a pretend tough guy. If you could, like you always do, like if you could fight one celebrity, I think I would fight Alex Jones.
Really?
I would.
I don't know enough about him.
There is a fascinating article I read a year ago about someone who used to work for Alex Jones, and they just basically spill all the secrets. It was such a good read.
Why?
About how he knows what he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he knows
it's a bit.
He knows how to get the clicks, but he's so driven by getting his name out there for no matter what he says, that he goes so insane to get those clicks, but he's actually like this really wounded person who needs a lot of help. It was a very interesting read because he used to be a producer, and he said it kept escalating. And I'll see if I can find it for you guys, but I remember just being fascinated reading.
None of that is shocking. When you see people who act like this, that's like straight out of the book.
Yep, and yet he's been uber successful. That guy's worth millions upon millions, and he's done it on the back. Like, he literally the Sandy Hook thing, all you need to know about that guy is that he preys on the dumb and the ignorant, and it's at the cost of human life. Like there were people that had their child murdered, their kindergartner murdered, and there were people showing up at their homes beating down their doors because this piece of S said that they were faking it, that it was a false flag operation. Like, I'm not for, you know, violence isn't the answer, but if someone were to do something to Alex Jones, I wouldn't shed a tear.
I just tweeted the article. I found it.
Yeah.
It's New York Times. So at Mike Lynch 27 on Twitter, I tweeted it. It's a very fascinating video.
The world would be a better place without Alex Jones. And given the opportunity, I would love to kick that man's ass.
There are a lot of people like Alex Jones, you know, yeah. that are just these, they become these, you know, they just they become these voices, you know.
Yeah.
Any side of the political side, it doesn't matter. And I understand why, right? Don't have to like it, but you understand why these people exist.
Yep.
But it's the dum-dums that follow people like this
that are really dangerous.
That really scares me. Like,
yes.
Who are these people? Like the QAnon people and
exactly.
All these,
that stuff terrifies
like
me.
Like Alex Jones is just a bit, like Mike said, he knows who he is. He's cash. He's laughing all the way to the bank.
Yep.
But the people that follow him,
that's the
terrifying
part.
And cannot
part.
Discern between that and reality are just, Jesus, man.
That's my thing is like, it wouldn't bother me if everyone was in on the bit. Right. But they're not. It's like the QAnon thing. Like you mentioned it, like you read through that stuff and you're like, there is no.
It all started as a troll.
Yes. I'm all for political discourse. You don't have to believe what I believe and I don't have to believe what you believe. I have good friends that are.
Yes, you do. You jerk.
That are staunchly conservative. And one of my very best friends is about as liberal as you can get. I lie somewhere in the middle of those things. And that's fine. You don't have to. You know, there's Supreme Court justices that were great friends that couldn't have disagreed more. So I'm all for that. But these people are just flat out dangerous because for just the sake of money, because they don't believe what they're saying, they whip up the dumb and the dangerous into these sorts of frenzies. And like I said, the fact that you think that making a buck off the back of murdered children and their families, you rotten hell, man. I mean, you are just an awful, awful human being.
So I've got something else from studyfinds.org. And I love this one because I do this all the time. Mm-hmm. However, I do.
However.
When I go to the doctor, I don't. Well, okay. I find this practice acceptable. And I know it pisses off doctors. Because.
Self-diagnosis?
Yeah. Like, Dr. Google.
Oh,
right?
I looked it up and I know what this is.
Well. So I'll do this, but most of the time we don't go to the doctor. I mean, I go to the doctor once a year.
Yeah.
Right? How many people have... If you haven't had COVID, have you been sick in like a year and a half? Because
no.
I haven't.
No, it's been a while.
So there's just nothing... There's nothing going down. So when something does happen, like I have this little foot thing that's going on. You know, I'm perusing the internet, finding out what this could be.
You have foot AIDS, yeah.
Foot AIDS, yeah.
It happens. Who hasn't had about a foot aid from time to time?
Or whatever it is, you usually don't go to the doctor
helps
for
put
it.
Me in control.
So when you Google it, it just makes you feel better that you think you might know what it is, and it really goes no further. I will say that when I go to the doctor, I never talk to them about what I always defer to the doctor, even though in my head I'm like, well, that's not what the internet said.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
But I'm sure it sucks for doctors that people come in and are like, no, here's what I have. I saw it online. You know, and the doctor's like, no, do I have to explain everything? I'm the doctor. So I never cross those boundaries with the doctor. However, at home, if I'm just looking to get a little insight on my allergies or my little foot problem.
Sure.
You know, I like it. It makes me feel better.
I had to stop doing it because I would do it and it would drive me insane.
It can, too.
Because
I
get it in my head of like, oh, my God, it's something serious, and
right.
It's not.
Right.
So now I have a very, very strict rule for myself where I do not look up anything health-related because it drives me insane.
Yeah, I'm probably a little bit different just because one of my very best friends is my doctor, so I just call him. And
yeah, see, not everybody can do that, Jason.
I am very fortunate in that. I don't
white privilege.
I don't look up anything, but I will tell you that I do call him with all kinds of ridiculous things, and I'm like, hey, by the way, what's going on with this? And his response
is... Do you mask the call as a friendly call, but then you drop that bomb on him?
No, he knows.
Oh, okay.
He knows. There's no pretense there. I'd be like, look, man, I got something growing on me, or I got something happening. I'm going to need you to come take a look at this. And he just laughs. He's like, come on in, and we always end up chatting. But that... So I don't know. I can't relate to it, because I don't want to look anything up, because I'm terrified that if I look stuff up, I'm going to naturally jump to the worst possible conclusion known to man. Plus, I know it drives him insane, because he says all the time that patients now roll in all bowed up. And he's like, during COVID.
Yeah, that would suck.
I thought he was going to just lose it, because every single patient that he had was convinced they have COVID. And he's like, you don't have COVID. You don't have it.
Yeah.
But everyone was demanding they'd want a COVID test. He's like, I don't have them, but I promise you, you don't have it.
Well, I've often said anytime you deal with the general public, you will come away massively disappointed.
Yeah.
So I can imagine how doctors must feel. I get it. At the same time, this study affirms my belief.
This guy says he's an ER nurse, or she says nothing will make me stop listening to you sooner than saying you Googled your symptoms. You walk in there, well, I Googled it, and we're done here.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't have anything. I mean, they wouldn't care. Why would they care?
Yeah.
That's not going to change how they go about...
No. Whatever.
Diagnosing.
We're still running the test, dumbass.
So, internet research may not sound like good medical advice, but a new study finds it can actually help. Researchers say patients who use Dr. Google to find out what's wrong with them will likely get the right diagnosis.
Really?
Yes. According to the report, Googling symptoms improves people's ability to diagnose their illness without adding additional stress. Researchers from Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School admit that cyberchondria has made the value of internet medical searches quite controversial. This increased anxiety brought on by continuously looking up every ailment online has even pushed some medical professionals to urge patients not to look up their symptoms.
Exactly.
Researchers add anxiety can lead people to think that they're on death's door when in fact they are perfectly healthy. Despite Dr. Google's poor reputation, study authors conclude using the internet to check your symptoms is not a bad idea.
Hmm. See, that's a fine line between Googling a few symptoms and coming up with a diagnosis. You are walking a razor's thin edge. And I kind of go the other way, too, in that I just tend to ignore stuff until it's so bad, and then I have to go... See, I had a piece of metal in my foot for like 6 months.
And did you Google it?
And I ignored it. No, I thought I had like a broken bone or something. And it wasn't until, it got so bad that they had to take an x-ray. And then I found out that it was like septic in my foot and so, had to go have it removed. I'm that way. I'm like, it'll be fine. Like, I'll shrug it off.
Do you want to know how they did this?
Yeah, what is the line here?
I don't care that we have to break.
Well, why don't we break and when we come back?
Why would
back,
he tell me that right when I'm getting to the meat of the story?
Because we're 10 minutes over.
Mm. Yeah, because I know that this is going to keep going and going.
All right.
And going.
All right, well, I'll tell you next on The Fan.
Club 1080 with Isaac and Suk.
Sitting on a cloud of judgment, handing down life lessons to all the sinners.
On 1080, The Fan.
Double sun power!
So we're talking about Dr. Google and how great it is. We no longer need doctors.
Someone is asking if this is a Google study.
I Googled the study.
Yeah, there you go.
Studyfinds.org, baby.
Bias.
Researchers asked 5,000 participants to read a short case vignette describing a number of symptoms and imagine someone close to them was experiencing them. The participants then had to make two diagnoses before and after looking up the symptoms online. Cases range from mild to severe, but common illnesses, viruses, heart attacks, strokes. Study authors also asked the group to choose between letting their health condition get better on its own or calling 911. And after making their choice, participants reported how anxious they felt. Researchers revealed participants were better at correctly diagnosing their cases after carrying out an internet search. The process also did not add to their levels of anxiety.
Hmm. Well,
so there you go.
Look,
robot doctors are coming.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, already like the teledocs, whatever.
Yep.
You know those. And some of that stuff obviously is easy because I'm sure, you know, some things are really easy. And the doctor can just look at something and be like, "Yeah, there it is. Let me write you a prescription and thanks for coming. You know, we're all good." But you know, there's just something about the level of care you get from a competent doctor. And you may think you have a sinus infection. Doesn't change the fact that you still need to go to a professional to find out if you have a sinus infection and to get the sinus infection cleared up. Like, you knowing or you thinking, and if you're right, at the end of the day, you still have to have someone deal with it.
I think you ought to be able to buy antibiotics over the counter. Antibiotics are great.
Right until
because you know when you need them, and then
until you take them for everything, and then you end up with some super strand of bacteria that kills you.
Yeah, but that's you're the king of that's my own fault, right?
That is true.
Why do you have to ban antibiotics just because some dumbass couldn't handle them?
Just like no more prescription drugs. It's a free for all like Mexico.
I didn't say that.
Go to the pharmacy.
I just said
everything.
Antibiotics. There's a lot of things that people go to the doctor for that could here's a Z-Pak.
Yeah, the problem is that certain antibiotics are better for different, you know, infections. So one antibiotic
again,
does not.
Google it. Look, these same study authors are planning on testing whether AI could use the internet to correctly diagnose patients. It is coming, and that is called robot doctor. Okay?
I still think I'm going to choose a real doctor.
All right.
I'm all for a lot of things in technology, but at the end of the day, I would like someone there with a medical degree that's looking at whatever it is that I've got going on and can give me their expert opinion. And I know there's bad doctors out there, but those are called second opinions. I trust medical degrees. The amount of hours that those people have to go through versus me working a Google on something, I'm going to take the pro every time.
RJ did the teledoc, and he said he found out he had shingles through teledoc.
Oh.
Never went to a doctor's office.
Okay. But that is still going to a doctor. It's just
well, you didn't go anywhere. You
yeah.
Well, the teledoc is a doctor, but how long before it's robot doctor?
I do not want the robot.
Danger.
I do not want the robot.
Wasn't that an Idiocracy? Didn't they have like walk-up things where they just scanned you and you're like just handed pills out or something?
Yeah, I do think that's in Star Trek or whatever. Bones didn't do anything. He just scanned you with that little thing. I will say that I'm guessing that if we looked back, if we were to be able to jump 200 years in the future, I'm sure we'd look back at modern medicine and just be like, what the F are we doing? Well, think about, like, even if you go back 50 years, think about how archaic medicine was. Go back another 50 years, go back to the turn of the century and see how far we've come. Like, did you ever watch, what was it, The Nick? It was about the turn of the century hospitals in New York, and it's terrifying. Like, we were still figuring out soap, and here we are 100 years later and look at where we're at. Now jump ahead another 100 or
Love
200
soap.
Years.
Soap's gotten so much better. Remember we used to have the old bar soap?
I like the bar soap.
Oh, come on.
Oh, I'm all into the, the shower.
Why would anyone ever have a bar soap now?
What do you use in the shower? Are you a body wash man?
Gel. Yeah, or like, yeah, the body wash stuff.
Man, I'm telling you.
And then my wife buys these really nice sink soaps that all smell great when you wash your hands at the sink.
Now,
it's great.
I do use the sink soap. But when I get into the bathroom, I want that big old brick.
Nope.
I love that it's got like the pumice stone in there. You can really get a good scrub in.
Nope. Body wash, man.
Men should
have.
It's
so much easier.
Men should have a big brick of soap. It just, it works.
Also, Bath & Body Works for the really nice smelling soap is fantastic.
They're great. My wife handles that in our house, and I would put her up against anyone in her ability to pick great soaps.
I just replaced it. I threw out the old one. I got strawberry shortcake. It smells delicious.
Yeah, all that stuff is...
See, I take all that for granted. I never even look at the what it's called.
Yeah.
I just know that my wife will have a great soap.
I do the hippie soaps, like the all-natural stuff. Where it's just, you know, you get I love the big hit, like the Dr. Squatch or whatever, and now they've got their own. Like, I've got some sort of goat milk soap that I bought at Costco.
Is that the company that started advertising recently that they have, like, the good bars of soap?
Yeah, they're amazing.
That looked intriguing to me, but then again, it was a bar of soap, which is annoying.
Now, I don't use, like, Irish Spring or whatever. I do
Dr. Squatch.
I use the hip. I use different ones, but yeah, the all-natural soaps. Because you can buy the same thing, but it's way cheaper.
Didn't you have to have a soap dish?
No, you put it in the shower. What do you mean a soap dish?
Well, I mean, doesn't your shower caddy have a soap dish?
I don't use the bar of soap on the sink. This is just shower time. The shower time.
Well, I'm just saying. You know, you go to hotels, they're still using the stupid bar.
Yeah.
And it sucks.
I'm telling you, man. You get one of these big natural bars of soap, weird. They're just wonderful.
Always dropping out of your hands.
You're a Neanderthal.
A man should have a big brick of soap. It just makes sense.
I don't think that's a need, but I have heard a lot of things that the body wash that we all use is really not that good.
Exactly.
For us.
It's not good for us.
No, like it's bad for your skin.
All kinds of dyes and bad chemicals in there and all that.
Well, isn't everything killing us?
No, mine's I got goat milk. I'm scrubbing myself with like pine tar and goat milk. It's wonderful.
All right. Up next.
Yeah, someone said Duluth makes a giant bar of soap that's called the Big Ass Bar of Soap. It's great marketing. You had me a big ass bar of soap.
Well, that's the name of the product, so.
I understand.
How many friends do you need to be successful?
Hopefully not that many.
Zero.
Zero. Interesting guess.
Ron Swanson says 2 to 3 is sufficient, so I'm going to go with that.
That next on The Fan. Here's Mike.
Club 1080 with Isaac and Sue.
I'm going to kick some butt in the traffic, track the roads, road. I'm going to kick some ass with the ass. I'm going to kick the ass. Rock flag and eagle.
On 1080, The Fan.
Double sun power.
You always capture me with a headline that reads, revealed. That's a key word for me.
Yeah.
What has been revealed? Well, in this instance, it is the exact number of friends you need to be successful. And why having too many can be just as bad as having none.
See, I can see that. That totally makes sense. They always say that, like, you got to be careful, like, if you're, like, an entrepreneur, like... You got to be able to go against the grain because like friends and family are going to be the people that are going to tell you not to do it more than anyone else.
Robin Dunbar is a British psychologist who specializes in human behavior. And he believes we can only maintain a certain number of connections at a time. And based on his research into human groupings, he says the magic number is... Any guesses?
I'm going 2 to 3.
Well, okay, so he's got different groupings here. This is total. Friends, like, okay. I mean, use that term loosely.
Yeah, because there's people that you're close. I would say, like, friend, like close friends, you talk to once a week.
Here are his categories:
all right.
Intimate friends, supportive friends, mm-hmm. or just friends.
Then I'm gonna say in total, I'll go 10 to 12.
150.
What?
150.
150?
He says these are mainly regular friends who we see at weddings and school reunions, not often. He suggests we have 12 to 15 supportive friends and 5 intimate friends.
Wow, that's a lot of...
Does this include, like, is your girlfriend and or wife your best friend in that group, or is that separate?
Reading. Separate.
Interesting. So you have your best friend and your significant other, and then 5 intimate friends otherwise.
That's right. So within your 150, which he believes the human way is not capable of handling more.
Boy, 150? I wouldn't have said the human way is capable of handling 20.
He says... We have 5 intimate friends who would donate a kidney to you. 12 to 15 supportive friends who would be distraught if you died. He also claims we have 50 good friends who would be invited to a birthday party, but not necessarily an intimate dinner at your house. His theory is based on the idea that we only have a certain amount of emotional capacity or energy to invest in other people.
So does this mean I have way less capacity than...
I feel like he's really overstating these numbers.
You're telling me you have 50 people you would invite to your birthday party?
No.
I don't.
Which is why the majority of people have roughly the same amount of friends. But he is right, I think, in a general sense that it's not very big.
No.
You know.
But his...
And it rotates. It changes.
Oh, sure. Right? I mean, you have friends that because of, you know, for whatever reason, you move away or they're in a different town. And I have some friends, I don't know about you, but like you don't talk to them that often. But when you do, you feel like you haven't missed a beat.
Yeah, that's a good friend
to me. Those are some of the best friends.
But sometimes people get bristly over if you haven't seen them in a long time.
Sure.
And they shouldn't, because if you have too many people in your social circle, you absolutely, you're stretched too thin. You can't.
Yes.
You just can't hang with everyone. You want to.
And that's why I said, I think, honestly, it's like there are 2 to 3 people that you can see on a fairly regular basis. And I think beyond that, if you're someone that has a kid or a job or like hobbies, you're just not going to be able to see them.
Well, his thing is, if you have a dinner at your house, 4 is the perfect number. It's another couple, because you want to have a meaningful conversation.
Oh, it's not 4 people, like four friends. So your spouse, wife, and
yeah. 2 more. And then he says 6 should be invited if you want the discussion to cover a broader range of subjects. And that's true. Like you get to sometimes you get to parties of 6 or more and nothing meaningful ever is discussed because there are too many people.
And you keep switching groups.
Butting in. And you're kind of getting around the room or whatever.
I agree. 4 is perfect. Like if you just go out with another couple and then, you know, maybe 2 of you talk to each other for a while and you have cross conversations and then you all talk at the same time, it's nice.
His idea claims 10 is the ideal membership for a book club to encourage diverse and lively debate, while holiday groups should consist of no more than 8 to avoid arguments and headaches.
Boy, the idea of that number stresses me out. 150? Yeah, even close to that. Trying to keep up with everybody. I mean, I've known you. I've worked with you for 2 decades. I talk to you like once every 3 years.
Yeah, but I'm in the 150, though.
Yeah.
So, see, I think if you really went
through...
You're
also in the 12 because you would be distraught if you died.
Well, that's true. I would be very distraught.
As are you, unless you died.
I may never get over it.
Then I would be distraught, but I would find it kind of funny.
But if you actually go through and do the 150, you'd probably get closer than you think.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah.
I may, if I'm sitting around one of these nights and can't sleep, I may start kind of putting together that I don't think I can come up with 100.
Well, I don't know that you'd get to 150. I'm just saying, I think there's more out there than you think.
I feel like I'm tapping out by his definition. I think I'm tapping out at maybe 40.
Well, I will say his lower numbers do seem to be about correct to me.
Yeah.
But once you get past the 12, like, I don't know.
Well, but he's saying past the 12 are people you don't see regularly. You see them at special occasions.
Right, but even that, I feel like he's widely over-exaggerating that number.
The 12?
Well, no, after the 12. Yes, I do think that
30.
There would be, once you get to the 30 to 50 range, I'm like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, at that 30 to 50 range, man, you are talking about, like, distant, like...
Yeah, like, I talk to them every once a year.
Or you see them on social media, and that's it.
Something like that. And you hear through the grapevine that something bad happened, and then you reach out to them, and you're like,
God,
hey,
damn.
Man, sorry about that. Like, kind of one of those sorts of things.
Or you think about them, but you never reach out to them because you don't want to bother them because they're going through something.
Yeah, there certainly is an element of that.
I don't
feel
it's my place to...
I haven't talked to you in a while, and so I'm not going to be the one that's going to chime in with the, hey, sorry about, you know, blah, blah, blah.
But I do like the idea of the 5, the intimate 5.
Yes.
And that does rotate. It changes based on, you know, your life circumstances or whatever.
But yes, I think every...
For a lot of people, I think it's the parents of the kids... That their kids hang around with?
I am proud to say this. And again, this may say something about me. I have never been close friends with any of my children's friends. Or I guess the children's friends' parents. I don't subscribe to that at all. That is right out.
Is that because you've met a bunch of them and you hate them all, or you just?
I haven't. I am not interested. My kid being friends with your kid does not mean that we need to hang out. And I have had several try over the years to make that happen. Oh yeah, our kids are hanging out. We should do something. No, we shouldn't. That's gonna be a no.
You know what's a weird one? Is when, like, for example, golf.
Yeah.
And you have a friend. And they're like, oh, you'll love this guy. Yeah. I'm bringing this guy. He's my neighbor. Or he's my kid's friend's dad or whatever. And that guy's a schmuck. And then you go, you don't say this, but in your head, you're like, why are you friends with him? Then you're like, why am I friends with you?
You know
if
why?
You're friends with him, and it's proximity.
Exactly. And this is proximity. And this is my point. When you're a kid, your best friend is the guy that lives, and maybe it's a little bit different now because, you know, you got, you know, no one talks to anyone anymore in person. But when we were kids, you were just friends with whoever was in your neighborhood, whoever went to your school. In college, right? My friends were my offensive linemen, not because, and I realized that when you go and meet those people later in life, you're like, boy, we were just put together. There was eight of us in a room. So right. We're friends because, you know, you're the other fat guy in the room with me. And as you get older, you don't have to do that. As you get older, you now expand and you get to pick your friends. And I'll be damned if I'm going to say you're going to be my friend simply because our kids hang out or you live next door to me. No.
Yeah, but for some people, it's convenience. It's like, oh, I'm going to go over to neighbor Bill's. I don't really like Bill, but it allows me to have a couple beers away from the family.
I will say that I've had one neighbor, my neighbor Henry, when we lived. It was nice having someone that you could, when you pulled up in the driveway and he was out, it was nice to have someone that you could talk to. He's the only neighbor I've ever had like that, and I miss him.
Yeah.
Because my neighbors now are bitches, and I hate them.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll get John in here. Wrap it up next on The Fan.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John.
This is Mailing It In with Big John Sicanic on 1080 The Fan.
Big Bad John.
Hot Corner is coming up next. Here's John. Hello.
What is up, gentlemen? What is up?
Nothing.
Hot
trying
friend
to
talk.
Yeah, we're talking about friends. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to have for dinner tonight, and it's exciting me.
Is that combined with the friend? Was it friend for dinner talk, or are they two separate conversations?
Two totally different things. Yeah, I squirreled on you.
Yeah, we were talking about how many there was a study how many friends you need to be like happy.
Friendship, look, everyone has an itch, a friendship itch that needs to be scratched, right? You need to have a good friend. You need to have a group of friends. Everybody needs that. I say that if you can get that itch scratched with the fewest number possible, you're ahead of the game.
All right.
Yeah, there's an element of that, although it is nice, like, in your friend group to have, like, a varied group. Like, if you've got, like, a lawyer, a doctor, you got a ticket guy, and you kind of get, like, a crew going, like an Ocean's 11 thing, it's quite beneficial.
Right. Right, but what I'm saying is, like, if you can be truly happy with your friend circle, it doesn't matter how many. If it's three, then that's awesome. If it's 30, that's even cool. That's cool too. It doesn't. Whatever it is for you, and everybody's different. Whatever it is, whatever that number is to scratch your friendship itch, that's just what it is. So whatever.
Yeah, this guy was just saying there's only so much capacity the human brain has for friendships. So he was saying basically everyone falls into what you're saying. I agree with, but he's saying, look, it doesn't matter who you are. You're really going to only end up with about this many. And he had different categories, but you know, you get the idea.
Sure. Right. Okay. Now let's switch gears. What are you going to have for dinner? Cause I'm curious.
Well, my wife makes these, stuffed jalapenos, you know, like keto things. They're bacon wrapped and they've got cheese in them.
That's an appetizer. That's not a meal.
No, it isn't. But she eats them as a meal. And so I was texting back and forth with her, the lovely nurse Nice, and she said she made those. And I'm like, I kind of gave her a, should I pick something up? And so now she's throwing a pizza in the oven for me.
Yeah, John won't do that because there's a vegetable involved. He's right out.
No, I won't do it because there's a jalapeno involved in that.
Oh, God, I love jalapenos. But anyway, you're right. That's not a meal. So I can't. I can't sign off on that tonight.
No, I can't. I don't like it when someone tries to take clearly an appetizer or soup and be like, oh, here's the meal. Nope, there better be something I'm dipping into that soup.
So I'm having a frozen pizza, John.
Well, I mean, pizza is okay, but yeah. That's...
Yeah, I mean, you know.
You having a Totino's, are you? A little pepperoni party pizza?
Yeah. I think I am, actually.
What kind of frozen pizza?
I think it's... DiGiorno's, maybe?
Yeah, that's... Rob's living the high life tonight.
Yeah. She buys those for me because whenever she doesn't want to cook, she... You know, she oftentimes gives me the middle finger.
Yeah.
It's a bone of contention in our house. Look, I pull my weight. I clean and I do the dishes and stuff. Yeah. But... I think she resents the fact that I won't even try to cook.
Yeah.
So she buys she buys the worst pizzas possible and she's like, here, I'll throw one of these in for you.
Screw you.
You ass.
I take a lot of heat, Rob. I take a lot of heat in the Sicanic household for not cooking. And my comeback is there are like four things I can make that I'm confident that I could make and put in front of you or the family to eat. And if you want one of those four, okay. But outside of that, like, you expect me to cook up, like, chicken cordon bleu or something, what? Like, you may as well ask me to fly. What are you doing?
Do you have a go-to, like, if I'm on my own and I, you know, there is no meal that's prepared, do you have a go, like, Rob with the frozen pizza? I have one thing that I make, and I'll make it for my, I always have the what's available there for me, and that's... Like, if no one's there to cook for me, I go to oatmeal.
Oh, whoa.
Oatmeal and sausage.
Oatmeal?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
I do an oatmeal with, like some cut-up fruit and then, like, some cinnamon and some walnuts on it. And then I usually have some, like, I get a bunch of those, like, Costco, like, breakfast sausages. I throw a couple of those, like, in the microwave or the pan. I'll bet you I eat that four times a week. When, like, I don't have a lunch or I don't have a dinner, I go, that's my go-to is oatmeal with a couple sausage links.
If you're telling me that I can't, like, if it's just me on my own, I'm probably ordering pizza. But if you're telling me I can't order something out and I have to make something for me just with what's in the house at any given moment, I'd probably go grilled cheese and tomato soup.
Okay.
That's not a bad go-to.
That's good.
That's not bad.
Yeah. You know what mine is? Mm.
What?
I will pull out the
bourbon
tortillas, and I will fill them with shredded cheese.
And quesadillas.
And I will eat them.
You grill them up, though, at least?
Grill, no, but microwave, yes.
You don't even grill it?
No.
Get a little crisp?
Don't care.
Wow.
And then maybe pull out the Doritos. What?
That's not bad, Rob. I do agree with my brother. You should grill them, but that's not bad.
Yeah. All of a sudden, I feel better about my oatmeal.
You should. All right, have a good night.
See you guys.
Love your body. All right, Hot Corner with Harrison Lynch is coming up next. Jason Quick, our Blazers insider, will be a part of our show tomorrow. Be here, won't you? 3 to 7 on the Fan tonight.
Red chips of Spain. Red chips of Spain.